On the surface, South America looks like it's going completely communist. But a closer look shows reasons for optimism, shows that the struggle for liberty, far from being over in South America, could still triumph. Let's take a look. This is Beyond the Cover with your host, Gary Benoit, and today we have with us Steve Bonta, who is a senior editor for the New American Magazine. Steve, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Gary. Good to be here.
Well, thank you. Well, today, Steve, you wrote an article that was published online entitled South America's Struggle for Liberty. And I think the perhaps surprising thing about the article, for people who are not following it as closely as somebody like yourself is the fact that you show great hope for South America, that the struggle for liberty has not been lost there.
Well, you know, I've been to South America a couple times and speak Spanish and some Portuguese. And so I have a great love for Latin America and appreciation for its culture. And the more when I was in Argentina just a couple months ago, I saw something that I've really not seen anywhere else in the world in my lifetime. And that is a country on fire with enthusiasm for liberty. Now, not everybody is this way. I don't want to overstate it. But the fact is, there's a guy in Argentina right now, name is Javier Milei, who is a trained economist. He's an economics professor. Mm-hmm. Not just any economics professor. He actually is an acolyte of Austrian economics, which for our listeners who might not be familiar, that is the school of free market economics that has been for some time.
And you wouldn't expect to find somebody like that in Argentina, would you?
Yeah, well, he became a media figure. He was a very popular media figure. He's got this sort of brash, flamboyant, take-no-prisoners style about him that Argentines like. He has several English mastiffs that he's named after free market economists, including Murray Rothbard. So it's kind of interesting. And he frequently goes on Argentine mainstream media, the equivalents of our MSNBC and CNN, and just throttles the left-wing, figuratively speaking, all the left-wing journalists and people like this, and introduces them to the ideas of the Austrians and Frederick Bastiat and Henry Hazlitt and all these other people that we here at the Birch Society and other people in the freedom movement are familiar
with. Sounds kind of like Ron Paul in the United States, doesn't
he
it?
He is kind of like a hybrid of Ron Paul and Donald Trump. He has that brash persona, that take-no-prisoners approach.
Of Trump.
But he's also, you know, he has a master's, I think, in economics, but he's recently awarded an honorary PhD as well. And he's been a professor of economics for many years. And he has a passion for also teaching people about these principles. He's also very socially conservative. He's anti-abortion and things like this.
Right.
Somewhat interesting personal life, kind of like Donald Trump, revels in personal controversy. But he has now become a member of the Argentine Congress. He's a deputy, represents a district in Buenos Aires. And he's running for president this year.
Right.
And all the polls indicate that he has a good chance of winning.
Well,
so that's
Right. And of course, like you said, a couple months ago, you were in Argentina.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember you telling me after that trip that everywhere you went, people were talking about this politician.
They were.
Talking about Milei. And so it seems like he's really catching on and has really captured the attention of the grassroots.
Yeah, well, he throws these big Trump-like rallies that have massive numbers of people coming. And many of them, they're like MAGA people, except a lot of them also have this remember the Ron Paul people were always saying, you know, thank you for educating me.
Right.
And so a lot of them say things like this, thank you for teaching me about freedom. Thank you. You know, let's go on. His movement is called La Libertad Avanza, which means liberty advances. And so that's, and Argentina actually, like a number of South American countries, has kind of lost in its past a little bit. It's kind of a bit submerged because of all the socialism in recent decades. But they have a very robust tradition of freedom. I mean, they had a very respectable cast of talented people who were their own founding fathers who created a constitution at the end of the era of the caudillos, the dictators that ruled Argentina after its independence from Spain. And they tried, several of those people spoke English and French and so forth, had been to the United States, studied the constitution, tried to create a constitution. They create a federal republic modeled after ours with a few Argentine wrinkles as well. They consciously wanted to create a country that would attract immigrants, talented immigrants. And so they deliberately adopted laissez-faire economic policies all mm-hmm. through the 19th century and well into the 20th century that made it Argentina like one of the easiest places in the world, not only to immigrate, but also to start a business or do, you know, pursue whatever you wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason that Argentina's economy and standard of living grew just unbelievably, probably even faster than our own, in the latter half of the 19th century and well into the early 20th century. And so Milei likes to talk about this in his right. campaign. He said, let's get back to the original constitution. Let's go back to the way things were, because Argentina was basically a libertarian paradise or something. He mm-hmm. kind of self-identifies as a libertarian. So Argentina right now is really on my radar screen because of this guy Milei. And he's kind of become the leader abroad throughout the Spanish-speaking world, or what they mm-hmm. call the Iberosphere, which is actually the Spanish-speaking and Portuguese-speaking world. So he knows the Bolsonaros in Brazil and this kind of thing. And he's been to Spain. There's also a movement in Spain, a party called Vox, which means the voice, that has brought him to Spain. He's been to Mexico recently. They had the first ever CPAC conference in Mexico, and he was one of the featured mm-hmm. speakers, and was just received with rapturous applause. So he's kind of right now the leader, and lots of people in the Spanish-speaking world know about this guy.
Right.
Almost nobody in the English-speaking world have heard of him at this
now
point.
Now, you mentioned Bolsonaro, yeah. who's in Brazil.
Was in Brazil.
He's
now in Florida.
He's in Florida, I'm sure, because if he stays in Brazil, his life probably would be in danger, or, you know, at very least, I imagine he could be subject to arrest. But he was the former president of Brazil, and he was defeated in a very, very close election. And the person who defeated him, Lula, has a very radical background. And, of course, those election results are being contested because they're just rife with voting irregularities. But what hope do you have for the people of Brazil under Lula? And do you see that swinging back again in the direction of Bolsonaro?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Brazil has many things in common with Argentina. It also has been at times, not to the extent that Argentina has been, but mm-hmm. it's also been something of an immigrant, you know, haven.
Right.
It's got a fairly cosmopolitan, well-educated population, a pretty robust tradition, I think, of freedom, although Brazil, of course, has also had episodes of dictatorships and in recent years. Lula, well, it was the site back in 1990. Mm-hmm. Not only was June 1990 was the year of the big global conference in Rio de Janeiro, which kicked off the global environmentalist movement,
right.
still with us today. Well, a month later, they had a meeting in Brazil's other megacity, São Paulo, and they founded the Foro de São Paulo, the São Paulo Forum, which is an organization that's attempting to create, in a sense, well, they call it an integrated Latin America. We all know what that means if we follow, you know, that's mm-hmm. globaloney for we want to create, you know, ultimately a single Latin American state, and it's going to be socialist. So it's basically a forum for all of the socialist, Marxist, and otherwise leftist right. parties, you know, from Mexico all the way down to Tierra del Fuego, including the Caribbean. And they get together and they plan how they're going to integrate Latin America.
Sure, which of course would be a stepping stone to world government, you know, piece by piece, region by region, and perhaps the most advanced example of that would be the European Union.
Yeah, so I guess to sort of circle back, so Brazil mm-hmm. has hosted some of these events, and because mm-hmm. it is the largest and richest country in Latin America, it's kind of maybe the keystone to some, it's the key to all of this.
Right.
A lot of the money's coming, although not all of it. I mean, actually, Milei and others who oppose the Foro de São Paulo, they say, well, it's really being funded by drug money mm-hmm. Coming out of, you know, Colombia and Bolivia and Mexico and so forth on the one hand, and Venezuelan petrodollars on the other. So mm-hmm. so those two things are what are allowing this movement to continue to propagate across Latin America. Now, as far as Brazil is concerned, though, the Bolsonaros, Jair Bolsonaro, who was the president of Brazil, mm-hmm. elected quite by surprise, is again, quite reminiscent of Donald Trump.
Right.
More of like an old style conservative than a strict libertarian like Milei, but also, you know, he tried very hard to get rid of, you know, the communist influences in Brazil, to for example, to make it easier for Brazilians to own firearms. That was one of the things that he was
right.
really good on, socially very conservative as well, and has a very wide following in Brazil. Now, he has lost the battle, perhaps, right now for...
Yeah, maybe not election, the war, but the battle.
By fair means or fraud.
Right. Well, what do you personally think? Because you've looked at the evidence very closely.
Oh, I think the election was probably stolen the same way.
That and certainly means the people in Brazil do, because there have been huge protests.
Right. But the thing is, I mean, you know, these insiders have, you know, starting in 2020, as we know, here in the United States, have kind of figured out how to win a couple of key elections.
Right.
By the various means that have been documented, other sources I won't get into, but, you know, but we kind of know that's going on.
Right.
As far as we can tell, what happened last fall in Brazil was a reprise of what happened in the United States in the fall of 2020.
Sure. Okay. But the fact that an election would have to be stolen, assuming that's what happened in Brazil, in a way provides hope, because you wouldn't have to steal it if you could beguile the people to vote for your candidate in the first place.
Well, the nice thing is that although Bolsonaro himself lost, okay, air quotes, his people gained many seats in the Brazilian
Congress. Which again suggests that something's wrong, doesn't it? Because you would think that if the tide is rising, so to speak, that all boats would rise with that tide.
Sure, but it does also bespeak the wisdom of our strategy here in-house, that we kind of tend to focus more on congressional and state elections and not so much on the big event like a presidential election, because that's so easy to control and manipulate. But Brazil, like the United States and Argentina, has a federal system. It's a very large, sprawling country, so it's divided into semi-autonomous states, and they send, you know, they elect many delegates, and so there are a large number of people who get sent to the Brazilian Congress, and they simply don't have the means to control the outcome of all those hundreds of elections. So the broader trend suggests that Brazil also, like Argentina, is turning, I hate to say towards the right because it's such a loaded term, but
I know, but toward freedom,
toward the cause of freedom,
right?
Yeah, and Brazil's not alone. I mean, in addition to that, Chile, who elected fairly narrowly a guy named Gabriel Boric,
who's a radical leftist,
very radical Marxist, probably the most except possibly for Colombia's new president.
They've also tried to change the constitution to make it a Marxist document, but I believe so far they've been unsuccessful in accomplishing that.
Well, yes, they have, and that's the thing. Boric was probably, I mean, Chile has flirted with leftism for a long time. Mm-hmm. You know, Salvador Allende and his daughter Isabel Allende, and all these other people who, there's undeniably a strong undercurrent of leftism in the Chilean psyche. But there's a guy named Luis Antonio Kast who very narrowly lost the election. Well, not very, fairly narrowly lost the election. Like
he was
5
about
or 6%.
55 to 45.
Something like that, yeah. But he actually won the first round and went into a runoff against Boric, and then Boric managed to win, if I remember the sequence of events right. So originally, you could say perhaps Boric and his leftist, you know, radicalism had something of a mandate from the people of Chile, and that went away very quickly because he's been teaching, the Chileans a tutorial in the ways of Marxism, as you mentioned.
Right.
You know, he wants to reform the Constitution and, in a way that will be favorable to maintaining, a sort of permanent entrenchment of Marxist interests in the Chilean government, something they failed to achieve under Salvador Allende generations ago because he was overthrown by a military coup. By Augusto Pinochet. Now, this guy Kast...
Which if that didn't happen, Chile would have gone communist.
Yeah, and this guy Kast is a big supporter of Pinochet. And so was his father. His father was actually... had been an officer in the German army during World War II. So they fled from Germany, just to get away. I don't think he was just an army officer. I don't know if he committed any atrocities, but he was still associated with the Nazism. So they came to Chile.
Right.
His son Antonio and several of Antonio's brothers and siblings as well are also very, again, to use the term, right wing. But anyway, the point is that Kast is still very active. He also knows the Bolsonaros and Javier Milei and some of these other people. He's very influential. And there's a good chance now that apparently Boric's rating, was like 70% or something like that when he was first elected president. The people of Chile were quite excited. And now he's down at last count, I think the most recent statistics I could find from October, it's like 26% popular approval and sinking fast because, the Chilean economy has been going downhill, and obviously this whole there were demonstrations, mass demonstrations last year. Many of the same people who probably voted for him are angry at the things he's doing. So he's doing a great discredit to Marxism, and that's a good thing.
Yes.
Because so these people, you know, Bolsonaro may be out of office for now. Cast may have failed to win, but you know, he'll probably be back. And some of these other people, I think Guillermo Lasso, who is now the leader in Ecuador. It's either Lasso or the guy that's in Uruguay. Uruguay and Ecuador, they're both small countries, mm-hmm. have recently elected right-wing leaders as well. And one of them, it's like his third try. And the first time he tried, he was just swamped. He got like 7% of the vote. Mm-hmm. And some Marxist was elected and this kind of thing. So there's a real sea change because Ecuador and Uruguay have a long reputation of, right. of being, you know, leftist countries. And they now both have right-wing presidents. Maybe more along the lines of sort of a center-right, not somebody like a Javier Milei or a Castro or even a Bolsonaro, but still
right.
a significant improvement on what they had. And then right in the middle of the continent is Paraguay, which has never been left-wing, as far as I know. And mm-hmm. it's probably the most anti-communist country in the face of the earth. Paraguay is the largest country in the world that still refuses to recognize the People's Republic of China. It has full diplomatic relations with Taiwan, formerly the Republic of China,
right.
and it has not budged on that position. It has zero interest.
It's got to be one of the few countries. So in fact,
Guatemala in Central right. America okay. is another. Mm-hmm. But aside from that, it's mostly small Pacific right. island nations.
Now, something that usually is not mentioned when people look at the political situation in South America is the part that Christianity may play in that, because South America is very, very Christian. And of course, there are those who would claim otherwise, you know, leftists would claim otherwise, that Christianity is compatible with communism, but the reality is just the opposite.
Oh, yeah. Well, now, of course, most of the Christians are Catholic Christians.
Right.
And those that aren't are typically have converted to very fervent evangelical churches, which are mm-hmm. quite common as well. The Mormon church is pretty right. very widespread in both Brazil and Spanish-speaking right. Latin America.
But do you view Christianity yeah. Today, despite liberation theology and despite how people can be brainwashed, do you see Christianity is still a bulwark against communism in South America?
I absolutely do. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we were talking about this the other day. I mean, just speaking about Catholic Christianity, so the yes. Catholic countries in Europe, primarily you know, Spain, Portugal, and Italy, mm-hmm. from which the Catholic populations of South America are derived, are pretty much post-Christian. I mean, I've lived in Spain. It's a beautiful mm-hmm. country. But you go into the churches there, and this was already decades ago, and you don't see anyone attending masses except maybe one or two very old right. ladies dressed in black or something
now
like that.
Now, certainly you've gone into the churches in Argentina and and I believe you've been you've spent time in Brazil, or am I recalling?
Not really.
Okay,
no,
not
just,
really.
Okay. Just visiting through. But
the churches you've certainly. Been to in Latin America, though, you find a difference between there and Spain.
Oh, very much so. Very mm-hmm. much so. I mean, Argentina, you know, I mean, Argentina has become a more secular country than, mm-hmm. than, for example, abortion is now legal in Argentina. When I was there first as a mm-hmm. teenager, more than 40 years ago, abortion was not legal, and right. neither was divorce. I mean, actually, you had to go to Uruguay to get divorced.
No, there's still places in Latin America, aren't there, where abortion's still illegal?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of countries, Guatemala, mm-hmm. Let's see, I believe Ecuador. There are like two or three countries where abortion is almost completely illegal.
Right.
And there are a number of others, including Brazil, where abortion can only be carried out if the life of the mother is in danger. And I think in Brazil, they might also include rape.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if it's provable rape, but other than that, it's strictly illegal. So you can sort of see that. Now, on the other hand, they've embraced some of the woke stuff that's come in, and you know, they legalize same-sex marriage in large swaths of Latin America.
Right.
But when I was in Argentina most recently, I noticed every time there was mass, the churches were full of people.
Right.
And you know, this one lady I talked to got to know is the grandmother of a friend of mine, you know, not much older than me, 10 years older than me, but she was very devout lady, very, very nice lady. She was always saying, si Dios quiere, if God wills it. That was kind mm-hmm. of her, it was almost like an afterthought, a tagline to almost every sentence
right.
she uttered. So I saw, my impression was of, I mean, certainly it's a more secular place than it was 50 or 100 years ago, but it's lagged considerably behind Europe and North America in this trend toward, right. You know, this rush into secularism and post-Christian civilization. I mean, I think it's fair to say that south of the Rio Grande, you still have pretty much a Christian civilization. Yeah.
Let's bring in Mexico, too, just for a moment. And I'd like to go back to the early part of the 20th century where the Christian church was outlawed. Mm-hmm. Catholicism specifically was outlawed, where it was illegal to have masses and so forth. And this peasant army of Christians rose up and rebelled and forced a change.
Yeah, yeah.
That patriotism, that kind of love of God and family and country, do you see that still throughout Latin America? And you see that as a game changer, where liberty could flourish once again in Latin America.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, it's already kind of moving in that direction. I mean, Argentina. One of the things that impressed me with Argentina when I was there mm-hmm. is they still have a robust gun culture. Mm-hmm. That's not true in Mexico. But in Argentina, what you need, I was told this. I met guys that owned firearms that were hunters mm-hmm. and this sort of thing. And they have gun stores. They have a big gun store in the Buenos Aires area. I saw a documentary on it, and they had AR-15s and most of the stuff you can get here in the United States. You need to take a psych exam. Mm-hmm. So there's a little bit of that, but generally, I mean, Argentina has a big hunting culture,
right?
And so that's a one good thing. And obviously, in Brazil, I think historically they've had a gun culture, and it's been sort of wrested away from them in recent years by leftists. But of course, Bolsonaro is trying to bring that back. And so you know, the other thing is historically, again, the people of South America won their freedom in a way similar to us. Mm-hmm. I mean, they had although I have to say the Spanish, at least I don't really know much about what happened with Brazil historically, mm-hmm. but you know, the Spanish Empire had become very weak as a result of the Napoleonic Wars and so forth and so on. And so they pretty much seized their opportunity and thought, okay, now it's time. And various people like Simón Bolívar and San Martín and others mm-hmm. led this really rather quick transition from being, you know, the overseas Spanish Empire mm-hmm. to being a bunch of independent countries, supported more or less tacitly by the United States. In fact, the Monroe Doctrine kind of came into being at that time as the United States sort of recognized that, well, we really have an interest in supporting,
right.
you know, our Latin American brethren as they try to shake off the shackles of imperial rule. And they did that quite quickly. Although there was bloodshed and there were people, you know, most of the battles that were fought in that process were fought between, you know, armies of sympathizers who wanted to remain Spanish. You know, the Spain itself didn't really have the strength to dispatch vast armadas and, you know, armies of redcoats, the equivalent of redcoats, something mm-hmm. like that. It was primarily local sympathizers and it went back and forth. But, you know, but there was bloodshed and great sacrifice. And in most cases, I mean, we, of course, had a lot of instability at first after mm-hmm. after we became independent, culminating in a civil war, the war between the states. So we've had our challenges, too. Argentina, though, didn't really even become a free country until it had been independent for more than 30 years. They went through a series of these dictators I mentioned mm-hmm. earlier called caudillos, who pretty much just ruled by force. But even in that period, there was already a debate over whether we should have some sort of a federal arrangement like they have up in, you know, in the United States up north. I mean, they already knew about this. And so in the last caudillo, whose name was Rosas, was overthrown, the Argentines were ready to try to instantiate something similar to what they'd seen in the United States. And, you know, similar stories played out in Uruguay and, you know, Chile. Paraguay has had, I think, more military coups mm-hmm. than any other country in the world history. It's been very unstable. So their road to liberty has been a rocky one, and they kind of aren't there yet. And, you know, it's hard to characterize the whole continent the same way because, obviously, some places are more advanced than others. But right. overall, some other things that are going on, I mean, they have the example of Venezuela right now. And a lot of people, you know, I heard this in Argentina, people, you know, would admit, they would say, well, I think I'm kind of a leftist, but I don't want Argentina turning out like Venezuela.
That type of thing. I mean, everybody, right. You know, Venezuela, there are Venezuelan refugees all over South America, including Argentina. They've come in there. And so the Argentines know firsthand what happens if you really give these kind of extreme ideological leftists, you give them what they want, this is what you're going to end up with. And so, you know, so there's that, and there are a lot of things. But I have great faith that in its own way and kind of following their own particular path, I think many, if not all, the nations of South America have a really good chance. They seem to be moving more. There's a groundswell right now of awareness and understanding of liberty.
Which is really encouraging to know. And we do need to wrap this up because we're running out of time here, Steve. But just one more question. Why should Americans be concerned about what's happening south of the border? And are there any lessons we can learn from the freedom struggle in Latin America?
Lessons? One is that I think, and we, if I'm not mistaken, we're going to see this in Argentina and other places over the next couple of years. It is possible to get rid of these Marxist types.
Right.
Even once they become entrenched, if the will of the people and the understanding of true principles is strong enough, it is possible to come back from the situation. So that's one thing. Another thing I would say is that, I'm optimistic because, again, we're talking about maybe another way of doing Christian civilization. I mean, obviously, if you go to Latin America, you realize, well, I'm not in the United States anymore. It feels different. There are different elements there. It's not the same. For one thing, you know, here our culture is primarily informed by Protestant Christianity. And there it's Catholic Christianity. And there are differences in kind of the way they – a lot of things, you know, without going into any details. But – you know, I think what I've seen in Latin America is that just because a people are perhaps enslaved and ignorant and poor doesn't mean they must always remain that way.
Right.
And what's happening right now, and we didn't even mention Guatemala, we could mention other places like this all across Latin America, this awakening that's taking place, I think, is testament to the human potential and what people can do if they are educated.
Right, and that's the key. Well, thank you very much, Steve. And we encourage our readers to, in fact, we'll put the link right in the description of this video to see the recent article that you did about Latin America. And of course, I know in the future you'll be writing a lot more about it, both online and in print.
Hope to.
Thanks. Thank you.
The world is changing. To be more specific, the world is being changed. These changes are affecting you, your friends, and your family. Do you know why these changes are happening? Do you know who's behind these changes? Were you consulted on these changes? For decades, The New American has been investigating the people behind the scenes making these changes, reporting on the policies and their implementations, and how they impact you and the world around you. But now, those behind the changes are moving at a faster pace than ever before in their effort to transform and reset the world. Staying informed and sharing information about the dangerous fundamental transformations being engineered all around us is more important than ever before, and protecting our God-given liberties, always crucial, is fast becoming a matter of life and death, and we will only succeed if we work together. That's why we've created this community for readers and supporters of The New American. Here you can support our work and join in to further the goals that we all share in ensuring that freedom shall not perish. Let's work together to stop the internationalist party of chaos and bring about a new birth of freedom and personal responsibility. Welcome to the New American community on Locals.